I've been fascinated, as have others. I hope you read the wonderful review essay by Ed Feld in the current Conservative Review. I've been fascinated by the phenomenon of sort of the religious echoes, the religious resonances of poetry that's written largely by people who would not consider themselves, particularly in the Israeli dichotomous, you know, dati chiloni language, who are certainly do not consider themselves to be datiim. They consider themselves to be chiloniim, and they live basically a chiloni life. A lot of these poets are wrestling with religious ideas, and they often express those ideas in their concerns in their poetry in a way that I think is particularly helpful. It's helpful to me in terms of my own, issues, wrestling, questioning, etc. And I think it's helpful to others, both to Jewish professionals and particularly to Jewish lay people who are often, I think, reluctant to sort of air what it is that's really bothering them, what it is that's really on their mind, what their hesitations really are. So I started with about 15, 20 poems that I really wanted to address, and then I narrowed it down to 6, and then I thought, because I'd already given the title of 6, and then I thought, oh no, but how can you possibly not have the Alex Livadia as part of this? So I added that on at the end. They're not organized. I wanted to organize them in a way that's sort of like a journey. In other words, it's moving from the ones that are more questioning and more rejecting and more challenging to the ones that are less so. But all of the writers, except for one, would definitely have placed themselves squarely in the Chiloni camp. And it's really fascinating to me to see this. Now, part of this is, of course, I think Ed Feld mentions that in his lovely review essay. Part of this is because you can't write Hebrew without its having resonances in biblical, liturgical, rabbinic texts. You sort of write Hebrew in an echo box. But part of it, I think, is because these issues are really issues that all humans who are looking for meaning wrestle with, and these wrestle with them in a particularly Jewish fashion. So I'd like to start with the first poem as Dan Pagis's poem Machboim. Now, Dan Pagis, who was born, just a little bit of context, in Bukovina in 1930 and died in Israel in 1986. This poem was...
1986.
This poem is from a collection that came out in 1975. Okay? He was a particularly interesting person, to my mind, because he came to Israel with relatively little background in Judaica and became a scholar of medieval Hebrew poetry.
Oh, wow.
Which takes a lot of work. And at the same time, wrote poetry himself. But his wife, in a sort of tell-all memoir that she wrote after his death, mentions, for example, that he was early on, I think it was at USC, he had a year's appointment as a visiting scholar, and he couldn't understand why the Jewish community thought that he had any particular relationship with them. And he never went. They never went to shul, because they didn't go to shul, because they're chiloni, so why would they go to shul, right? But it happened, they were friendly with the people next door, who were Christians, and their next-door neighbors asked if they would go to church with them. So why not? You know, let's explore something. So they went to church, and that's how they spent that Yom Kippur in church. Okay? So if... So when we read this, I think it's important to have a little bit of that context. I can read in Boston, but if someone wants to read in some other random Hebrew, that's fine with me. I have a volunteer.
Sure.
You can get that.
The writing's very small.
I'm sorry, I brought myself an enlarged copy.
Ah, there we go. The Chatzer Achorit Ba'olam Shachaknu Hu Va'ani.
Yeah, it's hard to read, I'm sorry.
Sichaknu, oh, there we go. Thank you. Sichaknu Hu Va'ani. It's
the Chatzer Achorit Ba'olam Sichaknu Hu Va'ani. כיסיתי עיניי, תחבק, אחת, שתיים, שלוש, לא מלפניי, לא מאחוריי, לא בתוכי. מאז אני מחפש כל כך הרבה שנים. אז מה אם אני לא מוצא אותך? צא כבר, צא, אתה רואה שנכנעתי.
So it starts out as a game of hide and seek. And until I think the first two words are fine. The Chatzer Achorit, well, where would you play hide and seek? You wouldn't necessarily play it in the front, you'd play it in the back, right? But then it's Ba'olam. So what is the resonance here of Olam when it's so much, you know, in my house, and in my village, in my kfar, in my kibbutz, in my something? But Ba'olam, that's a pretty broad scope.
And what's the world's backyard? Or?
Right, and what is the world's backyard?
Well, you translate the universe.
I translate it as universe because I think because I love the word Olam because it's so much fun.
Right.
Because it can be time and it can be space. Mm-hmm. And so there's a strong time element here as well as a space element. So I'm not sure whether it's time or space mm-hmm. there at the beginning. And so we played he and I. So that's nice. He's grown up, so he puts himself second instead of putting the other one second. Okay. So now we're back in a regular game of hide and seek. So he covers his eyes and the other one hides. And he counts. That's how you play hide and seek, isn't it? Achad shtayim shalosh. Lo milafanai, lo meachorai. Okay, so far so good, right? Lo betochi. Why would we be looking betochi to find? Why would he be looking betochi if he's looking for someone else? But we're still in a hide and seek game. Me'az ani mechapes. But from then, from a long time. And that sort of picks up the time resonance of Olam in the first line. Kol kach harbe shanim. It's a long time. I've always been looking. And then he reverts, instead of sort of standard Hebrew, he has this more slangy line. Azma, azma, ani lo motze. You know, azma ani lo motze orcha. So what if I can't find you? Tse kvar, tse. You see, I gave up. I've given up. So, why don't you come? Why can't I find you? So, in a sense, I think that encapsulates a religious quest. Right? He's looking in the Olam, way out there in the world. Adon Olam. Right? He's looking out there. He's looking for the Deus Absconditus, for the hidden God. Because God's the one who's hiding. It's the Hester Panim Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God's hiding. And he's playing the game right. Counting. Right? And then he goes to find him. And then he says, I've been looking for such a long time, I give up. I don't know what language, different parts of the country use different language for, you know, I give up, come out, wherever you are, I think is what we used in Boston in the old days. But it didn't work.
Does he ever comment on his own poem that says, in the context of a religious quest? Does he say it, you know, say anything like an artist on their own painting that calls it untitled? You know, like, I don't give it a title because I want you to bring it, you know, and I always hate that because I always want to know what the artist thinks about the picture that they painted.
I haven't read everything that Pagis wrote, but I haven't come across anything like that.
But the Lobatochi is very...
Right. Yeah, the Lobatochi is really... Where are we looking? Mm-hmm.
Did he ever say if he was attracted to any Hasidic writings similar in this regard?
No, but I'm glad that you raised Hasidic, because I think that there is a Hasidic resonance here. Sure. And... this I learned from reading an article by my colleague Avram Holtz on Agnon's famous story, which I think is the one story a rabbi can't go along without, Talit Acheret, another Talit, in which there's also a hiding piece. And Holtz brings a story from the Butzina Dinahora, which means the lamp of flame, or the lamp of light, which was written by Baruch of Medbish, who was a grandson of the Besht. And he brings this story about Rabbi Yechiel Michel when he was a kid, who was outside playing hide-and-seek with a friend. And he's playing hide-and-seek with a friend, and he was the one who was hiding. And he suddenly he's listening. You know, when you play hide-and-seek, you listen to hear, you know, the leaves crunching, the door opening, the whatever, something moving. There's all sorts of things to listen for. And after a while, he realized that no one's looking for him. So he was very upset. So he went to his Zeta study, Zeta, of course, also being a famous rabbi, and but unnamed in this volume, in this version of the story, but and says to him,
God is worthy of that.
Look what happened. This terrible thing happened. My friend's not looking for me anymore. And so he says, Zeta stops, and Zeta's job is, I think we're down there, I have more. More?
I got one more.
Okay. So Zeta's job in such a situation, I can tell you as a grandparent, is to say, don't worry, Kotel, it'll be fine. You know, I'm sure he loves you, he really wants to find you, etc. But Zeta starts to cry, which is clearly wrong in the script. And he says to him, that's what the Kodesh Baruch Hu says. I hide and no one looks for me. So here, in a sense, is the flip. Right? It's not that he is looking for God. And he can't find him. But it's that strong pull of finding that God.
What I find interesting about the concept of machboim is that when you play machboim, there is an anacha that there is somebody there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. It is, in one hand you say, you know, nichnati, but when you are playing, you know.
Someone's there to hear.
Someone's
here to hear everywhere.
Like, even if you are, like, there's no a complete achna'a in the world.
There was also an interesting thing that was very much on that, or at least tangentially related to that. The philosopher Alan Watts said everything is basically a variation on peekaboo or hide and seek. That everything comes down to a vibration space, vibration space, vibration space, and we're constantly trying to get back to this surprise, the reveal. And when it becomes this, particularly what really hit me was this meditation of God saying, I'm hiding and no one is looking for me, which is such a violation of that rhythm, of that expectation. And immediately I'm thinking, oh, what am I supposed to do about this? Mm-hmm. What do I do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the interesting is the feel of the shift in the poem. In the beginning has so much intimacy. Sichaknu hu ve'ani. We're playing together. Kisiti and I. It's so...
so nice and joyful and I'm looking for, but there's still this feeling of connection. And the second half of the poem is just, you know, there's nothing. It doesn't give you any other texture of looking. Now he's been looking for years. Here he's playing one afternoon or one moment, and there's a nice feeling. And there's no... for years, but it doesn't give you any clue of what that searching is. I don't know, I feel like he's not really looking.
Hmm. Hmm. Interesting. It's insincere?
Yeah, it doesn't feel as nice. If you're really looking, like, so put so something look. In there. Say something about that. Hmm. And that doesn't feel as much.
Just about the structure of the poem, there's five longer lines, at the beginning, at the end, and Lobatochi is right in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of, I don't know, sort of the fulcrum, the shift.
Right.
Because I was David was reading, I was thinking, oh, and Lobatochi kind of is the transition, mm-hmm. and brings you to the.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And it's exactly Batoch, the poem.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'd like to move on to a poem by Amir Gilboa. Born in 1917 and died in 1984. He was born in Radzivill, which is now in Ukraine. This comes from a collection that was published in 1968. And I must say, the first time I encountered this poem, it was in an article about Gilboa, and I thought, gee, that's really interesting. I wonder what the rest of the poem says. Because it sort of looks like it's torn.
Mm.
So, since I have a larger print copy, I will subject you to Boston Hebrew. Ani mitpalel mitoch halev sidur.
So does that mean?
I'm sorry. This is the whole poem.
So this is the whole poem.
Right. So I went to his, you know, his collection, and there was nothing else there. Ani mitpalel mitoch halev sidur. Karua shulayim v'chol hamilim hachaserot ani ro'an mitofofot kvar zman rav mitofofot u'mevakshot manoach l'chaf haregel ech avi lahen mazor v'lei siduri ahul shulayim azal v'arom. So it's relatively short. It starts Ani mitpalel mitoch halev, and that right away presses our kavana button, right? It's the keva kavana, so this is the kavana button, and that's a good thing,
mm-hmm.
right? Kavana is positive, so we got. And then, but what's this word sidur doing here at the end of the line?
Well, it can't be ignored, that's for sure.
It
can't be ignored.
No, it can't be ignored.
Keva. You say Keva, not here's Keva.
Right, this is a, right, the Sidur represents Keva. So, we have it out there. Notice there's no punctuation at all in the poem.
Yeah. Is the Sidur with Sidur Karua, or?
Exactly.
Or is my Leva Sidur?
Right, not only that, I'll give you a little bit ahead. If you move to the last word of each line and make it the first word of the next line, the poem reads much more smoothly, which he must have noticed, but he didn't do, okay? Yeah. So what we have is all of these enjambed lines. The lines are all run-on lines, and that just complicates things. Okay, so...
Interesting.
I daven from the heart.
Yeah.
Right? A sidur that is torn at the margins. So how often have you presented someone with a chumash or a sidur and say, I hope you wear it out? Mm-hmm. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So here it is. It's worn out. The margins
mm-hmm.
are torn.
Mm-hmm. And so, right, so I'm flipping. Yeah.
And all of the missing words... Well, that's weird to me. Because it's torn at the margins.
What words are missing?
What? Why are the words missing?
Isn't the margin the essence, though, of the rabbinic its twist. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In other words, the text is at the center of the page and the margin is for...
It's my commentary.
Commentary. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Or as my dad used to say, it's for the mice to eat as long as they don't touch the text in the middle.
So it's the commentary. It could be the rabbinic... this is clearly a poem that can be read in a million ways, but this is one good way of reading it.
Or his own.
It could be his own commentary.
Yeah.
Okay. But there are missing words. But they're not really missing in the sense that they're hiding. You can't find them. We're done with that. They are flying around. Remember that? It appears in the Gemara. In Avodah Zarah, particularly.
Yeah.
The story of Hanina ben Tradion, right?
And you're all the time, yeah.
And so he sees the letters.
Is that the same word we used there?
It's not the same word. I did bring the text, but it's not the same word. Yeah. But it's the same idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
In others, the Agvilon Nisrafim, and the letters Parchot Bavir, the letters are flying off into the air.
So two ways that I read the poem. So first of all, I read the first line as Ani mitpaleil mitoch halev sidur. Everything, when I pray, everything comes from my heart. It's the whole thing is there already.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need a sidur.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't read it as kevan kavana. I read it as the ultimate kavana.
Mm-hmm.
And the other way that I read it is, I didn't make your observation about that the first word goes to the next line. But I read it twice. I read it, it's on every line, and it's the last word of every line, but also the first word of every line.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's well be why he did it this way. Because if he put it as the first word, we wouldn't think of it as the last word.
Right.
But if he puts it as the last word, we think that suddenly we realize, at some point in reading it, we realize that the whole thing could just be shifted over one word, and it would...
And it's also the way sometimes that I daven is you read and you go back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's not, it's kind of read without punctuation, at least when I read it.
Mm-hmm. But I just want to go back to Hanina ben Tradion for a second, because Hanina ben Tradion was one of the rabbis killed by the Romans during the Bar Kokhba revolt, right? So we're talking basically about the end of Jewish sovereignty. Right? The last revolt.
Yeah.
File that somewhere. Okay? Umevakshot manoach lechaf haregel. Where does that come from?
What is that?
Yitzchak and Esav. No,
the dove.
It's the dove. It's Noah.
It's Noah.
Right. So now we're in the Noah story. So we've just moved from Hanina ben Tradion to Noah. And now look at that last word. Ech. Echadi. Okay. So we have, if the Ech were moved next to the Avi, we would have Echa, which I would not have mentioned or even noticed, frankly, unless I'd already met Hanina ben Tradion and Noach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because that's a destruction. That's a destruction. Now we're on our third destruction. Avilahen Mazor. It might be a reference to Yirmiyahu, which has some destruction connections. V'lev siduri achul shulayim, and the heart of my sidur, halev sidur, lev siduri, is eaten at the margins. But that's different from karua, right? So karua, while we're standing out, while we're hanging out with Hanina ben Tradion and Noach, and Echa,
Karua is torn
as in Kriya.
Kriya.
Mm. it doesn't use the word balui, which is also to wear out.
Ech havila hen sidur mazon valev siduri achul shulayim. It's consumed at the margins. It's not just torn. Torn, you take a piece of tape, you can try to put it together, but when it's destroyed, it's totally gone. Azal, it's spent. Ve'arom. Now, let me ask you to do something else. Count the words in the lines.
Oh, 5, 6, 6.
Okay. 5, 6, 6.
5, 4, 3, 2.
So what's missing?
1.
So.
And 7.
7. Okay. What bothers me is the missing 1, frankly.
Yeah.
Because my question is, what is the 1? Right? Yeah. Is it the 1?
It's a zazel.
Right. Whatever it is, it's not in good shape. It's gone. And it's interesting that the word azal is also used in the phrase azal min hashuk. It's gone. It's gone from the marketplace. It's done.
Does the poem have a title?
Nope.
Going off of just a little different take, thinking about tefillah as being about when you're holding a prayer book, that's like a little bit of a protection and a little bit of something you're sort of using. And the core of tefillah is to have this experience without anything, without any protections, to make yourself vulnerable. And if you sort of take away all of these other things, and sort of the destruction of the self and get to this core experience, sort of seeing him striving for that, kind of really more vulnerable kind of experience of tefillah. And he's finding, needing some place to hold on to help him in that state.
Having gone through not only personal losses, Karua Shulayim, but also national, well, universal in Noach, and then national losses.
National.
Which are other things that might have buttressed him, might have protected him, might have insulated him. So one might end the poem as it begins, Ani.
The one. The self.
Azava Roma Ani.
Mm-hmm.
So it's around.
Yep, right. It's like a Morbius loop. You can't get out of it, right, in a sense.
But if there was a one at the end, no matter what it was, it might also represent God.
Right.
Yes.
Does it work the other way? Can every last word also move backwards up? So it's not just the Ani? Because if you go and keep the circling... Mm-hmm. Karua Ani mitchalel mitchalel.
Mm-hmm.
מתעופפות קרוע שיליים, כל המילואים החסרות. איך מואן מתעופפות כבר? לב מבקשת מנוח. It's a push. Still the מבקשת that part.
But I think it's also, it's not just, I think it's a really profound way of thinking about the prayer experience. All these things that are taken away and the core that's left. Mm-hmm. Another possibility, somewhat less personal and I guess less heartfelt for the last word, might be Siduri.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I prefer the Ani myself, but just, you know, full disclosure.
Does Aron take us back to Gan Eden?
Yes, Aron can take us back to Gan Eden.
Right.
So there are all these...
Yeah, it takes us to the beginning.
Right.
Right. So there
and,
are all...
And alone, also. And the and the loneliness of the first human being, I think. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Although, not necessarily.
Right. It could be. Depends on which story
you want to read. Right. And how you want to read it, yeah.
So I don't. I have some more texts.
Just got the image of a torn prayer book at the margins at my nursing home. Many of the prayer books at the margins from use or from frailty, mm-hmm. the fingers and the touch.
So I want to move very quickly this time to a poem by Chava Pinchas Cohen called Kadishya Toma, first published in 2000. She was born in 1953 in Yafo. And what helps us understand from a sort of biographical, God forbid, point of view, the poem is that her husband died suddenly, relatively young, and leaving her with their four daughters. Okay? So this is Chava Pinchas Cohen's Kaddish. Kaddish Toma. Lo tihiyah menuchatcha v'lo yetzu li banim mizaracha yirkadal v'yirkadash. Lo atzdik et hadin v'yomar 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 yitbarach yitgadal v'yitkadash shmei rabba v'yoma divra chirute. Uritzoni koev umachiv umatil tzel v'yishtabach v'yitpa'ar. V'gam or v'anu rogdim al hakatze v'ketzev kaful tzadim bein ha'or hasoref l'tzel harotev v'yitramam. Na'anim b'tshnua la'moshech pachutim Yehe Shmei Rabbam Mevarach Le'olam Yomel Maya V'yitnase. Hine gam ani machnisa Rosh Ufanim La'makom Bo Bikashta Amen V'amen Kamo Lufanim V'yitadar V'yitalech Shigimshoch V'yolich V'yovil V'yischav V'yitaltel Nishmati V'yitalal Al Oto Sulam She'ein lo keitz, yivieni elecha, v'yase li dmurcha. Hallelujah. Yire'e onyi, v'yishma rivi, v'yase lecha shalom v'amromim, la'ela u'la'ela mon kol shirata shiadati. So it is, in a sense, I think, the Kaddish is a protest. And it reflects the struggle with the Kaddish. Mm-hmm. Because if we actually, it's a good thing that a lot of people don't understand the words, because if you have to say those words when they're really torn up inside, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, it's really a struggle. It's really a struggle. It's much easier to say them if you don't know what they mean. And so she's struggling with it. And she's talking about, you know, what kind of menucha are you going to have? And I'll never have those sons, which means that it's a woman who'll have to say Kaddish, if anyone, right? And we have Tziduk HaDin in the second mm-hmm. line, yes, right? And Ve'omar, 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 it's like hard to get it out.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. a stutter.
I always think of it as sort of over and over and over, because, you know, when you say Kaddish, you say over, over and over.
That's also that's another way of thinking about it. And so it's the world, it's your world, God. Divrak Chirute, His will. Viritzoni Koev. Like, I have a Ratzon too, and it's not the same as God's Ratzon. Mm. Okay? And sometimes there's light and some shadow, and sometimes there's light. And what do we? What is life? But dancing on that edge, double time, right? Between the light and the shadow, between the burning light and the shimmering shadow. And all we can do is respond to the one who's pulling the strings. And so we have the response. And so we have also in line 10 the regular Hebrew struggle to identify makom, right? That every time you see makom, you have to think twice. So which makom is it? Is it the makom that is God here, or is it the makom that is a place?
There's also the bikashta can be either God or the husband.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's a double.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I love my makom bikashta.
Right? And so, and then as we go, Shiyim Shoth V'Yolich V'Yovil V'Yishchav Yitaltel Nishmati, some way or another, right? We have a choice here of five verbs. To the ladder, the endless ladder. And so we're, I think, probably with Jacob's ladder. And bring me to you. But which you is it? Is it you? Now I begin to wonder, is the you her husband? Or is the you all the time, from the beginning, Menuchatcha, it's God, what kind of Menucha?
Well, Dmutcha at the end.
Right. Dmutcha at the end.
Yoseli Dmutcha.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I guess, I don't know.
Because
it said that we... Right. So I'm thinking God, but maybe some reflection of her husband.
Right.
And, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The notion that in the dream you can ascend up and somehow touch
mm-hmm.
the love
yeah.
of the past.
Right.
Or a suicidal yearning to join them.
Right. Mm. And yet it ends, the Yitalal, it ends, hallelujah.
Yeah.
Right? So it's almost as though she somehow worked it through. All the Shira that I ever
heard. Or maybe she's saying hallelujah because she feels redeemed by just having gotten it out.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe she's saying hallelujah ala David Blumenbach and facing the abusing God, where mm-hmm. it's with a big question mark or an exclamation point with an FU following it. Because those last few lines
just a question.
Is almost like a come back and look me in the face now and answer me from all of what I know that you promised.
There is a big question about the name of the soul, because it's Kadisha Toma.
Mm-hmm.
She's a mana.
She's a mana.
Right.
So
right.
Why does she use Yetoma? I mean, that has, she chose that on purpose.
Yes, she chose it on purpose.
So it's,
and maybe to reflect the fact that she has four Yitomot.
Yeah.
Because she's not the Yitomot.
Because she's not the Yitomot.
She was also, her father died when she was very young.
Yes.
So it might reflect the fact that she thought
mm-hmm.
another loss. Uh-huh.
Right, yes, another loss. So it's a quick transition from these really upbeat and uplifting poems. Could we just go around and have everyone just quickly say a name so everyone gets at least to know
and
who
you are
and where you are from or where you are, whatever. Larry.
Larry Siebert, New York. Chaim Singer Franks, St. Paul, Minnesota.
Judy Fab, Japan, New Jersey.
David Saltzman, New Jersey.
Judith Leptifer.
Elliot Schoenberg, Riverdale Assembly.
Diane Colores, New York.
Steve Shulman, Riverdale and Fairfield, Connecticut.
Claudia Greenman, Brooklyn, Massachusetts.
David Lerner, Lexington.
Barbara Steyer, Los Angeles.
Karen Reese Medved, Atlanta and Boston.
Heather Allman, Chicago.
Thank you. So that'll just clear our mind for a minute, so we can look at this poem by Zelda. Zelda's full name, Zelda writes under the name Zelda. And we know there's a tradition in Hebrew letters of women, grown-up women, writing not for children, but really for adults, women poets who use only their first names. By the time she was writing, however, the tradition was pretty much gone. But it's not the only piece of her that's a little bit different. Born in 1914, came on Aliyah with her family when she was about 12. She was an only child. But her real name is Zelda Schneerson Mishkovsky. She's a direct descendant of the Chabad dynasty. Okay? And so she comes from a background that's somewhat different, and she stayed there. In other words, she didn't break, as most of the other poets who were traditionally educated and lived, etc., broke with a tradition. She didn't break with a tradition. She lived a traditional life. She lived first in Jerusalem with her parents until at one point she got married. I think she was in her late 30s when she got married, and her husband, he's the Mishkovsky, moved in with her mother. Her father had died, and moved in with her mother. And her mother, wherever they moved, her mother had moved to Tel Aviv at one point, and to Haifa, where she was always with her mother. And she took care of her mother. She was a teacher. She was very interested in painting. Wanted to study at Bezalel, and did study, I think, at Bezalel. And interested in painting. And she wrote poems. And she didn't have them published a lot. And what she did have published was in relatively obscure, generally from journals, and didn't reach the great Hebrew poetry reading public until somewhat under the push from Dalia Ravikovich, who's a well-known poet herself. She said, "We'll put it together, make a book." You know, like that's what people do. So, that makes her very different from some of the others. I particularly like this poem. Well, you'll see. Maybe you won't like it, so I shouldn't say. Ka'asher beirachti al haneirot. Ka'asher beirachti al haneirot, kar'u kisufai b'kol. Shabbat shalom yakirai. Achema natshu et arzot ha'chayim v'lo anu laroch. Amar chagi haroed. Shirashai l'mala. Lachashti, shalom lach, shabbat lach, nishmati. Mibaad ledimotai, shotetu shal havot, vehakir kulo zahav menatznetz. Kol kach or misvivi, v'chol kach hakeev. Od rega, v'teitzei nishmati. So it's that moment. It's the moment the Shabbat is entering. And it's that powerful moment of Lichtmenschen when so many memories suffuse it. And so many, I'm thinking particularly of Bialik poem, Imi Zichrona Levracha, where he talks about his mother's poverty and the tear that drops from her eye and extinguishes one of the two candles that she's bought candles with whatever she has instead of buying, let's say, something she could eat, because that's the candles were more important. And so this, the crying, the overwhelming emotion of that moment. So that's what she's portraying. She seems to be alone, right? She had no children. She's thinking of the people who used to people her life, and so she has her longings, her kisufim, say out loud, as it were, Shabbat Shalom, Yakirai, my dear ones. But they're gone. They're dead. And so they didn't answer with tenderness, or to the tenderness with which she expressed it, I think is probably more likely. And so here's the Yontif of Shabbos. And she's saying it's chagi haro'ed. It's trembling. It's not so firm. It's not so stable. It's like the light of candles that flickers. My roots are above. So that's a really interesting question. By that, does she mean my roots are above my family, my ancestors? I can trace myself all the way back to, and they're all gone. Or does she mean I am rooted in Olam Haba, or in
heaven. Maybe the roots are above and the tree is actually coming down in a reverse.
Well, I was just thinking it's
Yom HaShoah. I think that was last year's Yom HaShoah poster. Was it a poster where the tree looked like it was a normal rooted tree, but actually it was the rooted trees. The roots were above and the tree was growing and I was just able to move it.
Very interesting.
I can imagine that image is
being pulled away from the ground. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because she's not. Her roots are not in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And od mat yetzei nishmati.
Right.
Od rega.
Right.
Yetzei nishmati.
Right. So does that? Huh. Does she think she's going to die in a minute? I don't think so. I think that it's her soul is pouring out in a sense, pouring out of her, in a sense to meet what's coming down.
It's interesting because it's the opposite understanding of usual understanding of Shabbat, but then the Shabbat Yitzirah.
Mm-hmm.
Right, hers is leaving, but it's the time when another one comes in.
Mm-hmm. And so we have this crying, and suddenly we're almost in a Kabbalistic setting. It's where everything's transformed. It's like there's gold on the walls. It's like a palace, right? It's beautiful and it's shining.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all sparkly. Kol kach or misvivi. Now, if I got that from a student, I would say kol kach harbe or, right? Kol harbe yoter or, right? There's a missing word there. Right? Kol kach or.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Misvivi. But it's just that she doesn't need all the words to say it because it's so obvious that the light is all around her. V'chol kach hakeh. And it's pain. So you have the joy and the pain. Od rega, v'tetzei nishmati. It's going. It's like so overwhelming. I could faint from it, in a sense. And so there's a piece of the other side.
You know, she has a poem in the Machzor of Shalem, which is phenomenal. L'chol ish yeshem.
Yes. Well, L'chol ish yeshem was a temptation to put in here. But I didn't put it in because I thought you probably had access to it. And I used to warn, when I was teaching rabbinical students life cycle, I used to warn them not to use it unless they were really, really stuck, let's say, in a eulogy.
It was in the packets.
Right.
Yes, it was in the packets. So I used to say not to teach it, not to use it. Like, don't, because someday, sometimes are people from whom you have to give a eulogy and you're really in trouble. Like you don't know what to say. That's when you use it. But if you use it when you have other things to say, it becomes so trite, it's, oh yeah, sure, another one. You know, so that's why I didn't put it in.
No, this is great. This is good.
I also...
What her pain is, though.
What?
I'm wondering what her pain is, Kol Kach HaKeh.
I think it's the loss, it's the loneliness, it's the loss. It's the loss of her parents, the loss of her husband, the loss of all the generations from before, and her separation. And, of course, by the time this is written, it's the Holocaust and the destruction of the whole civilization. I don't know exactly. It's hard to know.
Shabbat and Chag is like that sacred time. That's when the light is there to feel the light, that you realize the distinction more.
Mm-hmm.
That's like being at Christmas, being in the light, with the rest of the week, the rest of the life.
Yeah. Right.
No.
And why Chag? I was surprised when she said Ner Chag.
Right, but she says Shabbat Shalom.
It's Shabbat Shalom and Amar Chagi, right.
Right. So I think that she's saying that it is a holiday for her. Uh-huh. Shabbat is a Chag.
Right.
And
okay.
So there were two more poems in this packet.
I'll give you the reference because I think it actually works. The Yom HaShoah of Tafshin Ayin, it looks like Dalet here, but it might be Gimel. The poster is roots with a family tree with an illusion above of a tree.
Thank you. So I have two Amichai poems here, and of course one could do the whole thing, you know, forever. Neil Gilman says in 100 years from now people will be reading Amichai the way we read Tillem. Because there are so many, so much religious resonance.
He was a good teacher.
Amichai,
Adam too.
So I'm going to send this around. The poem at the bottom of this page, which I had intended to end with, but I will just keep going here for a few more minutes, if you'll tolerate that. I'm sure there's enough for you. This is the poem. This is a volume from which the poems are generally not, and they're not included in Kol Shirei Amichai, the five-volume set of his poetry. These poems are not in it.
So it's not really Kol Shirei.
It's not really. I was shocked. So this is Amichai, and the whole book is like this. In other words, there are photos, and there are his poems in English, Hebrew, and German. And although he said he didn't write poetry in German initially, he actually did. Neely Gold has a wonderful book that she went through all of his archives and everything, and he did. He didn't publish poems in German, but he wrote poems in German. Mm. That was his mother tongue, as we were to say. Mishehu she'et panav lo ra'inu, hishlich kan et glimato v'halachlo. V'lanu mishar lumod min haglima, kifalim, 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 kadosh, kadosh, kadosh.
Wow.
So there's that incredible picture of the landscape. And it looks as though somebody dropped a piece of cloth fabric, right? Dropped a cloak. It's just there. And there are all of these amazing folds in it. And so it's someone who did this, someone who we didn't see, right? And left the world like this.
All we see is the cloak.
What?
All we see is the cloak. Yeah.
All we see is what they left behind. What they left behind, sort of like Moshe. Right, seeing, perceiving God from behind. And so here's Amichai, who was Bechlalo Dati. What could be more amazing? We look for God sometimes in Yontif, like in a peak moment, like lighting candles. We look sometimes for God in nature. And here is just such an amazing shot of God in nature. And sometimes we look for God in ritual. So while that's going around, it's hard for me to pick a favorite on Amichai. There are so many that are my favorites, but Bikoshi said no more than two. And I wanted to show you this one because I'm sure you haven't seen it. But this you may have seen. This is from his final volume, Paduach Sagur Patuach. Mishi Zatef Betalit Min Urav Lo Yishkach Leolam. Hahotza Ami Sakita Kti Faharakau Kti Chata Talitam Kupelet. Prisa Nishikat Hatsavaron Lo Orko Hatsavaron Lifamim Rakum Lifamim Musar. Acharkach Kitchnu Fagido Lame Al Harosh Kimosh Shamayim Kamot Kupa Kamomatsnea. Acharkach Lichrochota Siviv Harosh Kamobumach Boim. See, the whole thing ties together. Achar kach lehitatev ba'kol haguf. Smudat smuda lehitkarbel kemo golem shel parpar v'liftoach kemo knafayim v'la'uf. Umadua hatalit v'fasim v'lo b'mishpitzot shachor lavan kemo luach shachmat. Ki haribuim him sofiim uv'litikva. Hapasim ba'im me'ein sof v'yotzim le'ein sof. Kamo masulei hamra'a v'stei tu'ufa l'nechitat ha-malachim u'lahad ma'atam. Mi shehitatev b'talit v'yolam lo yishkach. כשהוא יוצא מן הבריכה ומן הים מתעטף מגפת גדולה ופורס אותה שוב מעל ראשו ושוב מתקרבל בה צמוד צמוד ורועב עוד קצת וצועק ומברך. So here it is. The first time I taught this many years ago was at a retired RA convention, and a couple of the men said to me on their way out, "This is going in my talis bag. It's better than the meditation that's in the siddur." So it's partly the tactile memory. It's the same way that when you ride a bike, you don't actually forget how to ride a bike if you've ridden a bike a lot. Mm-hmm. You may not be as good as you were, but the basic thing, it's there. It's in the tactile memory. And so here it is. If you put on a talis when you're young, you never forget. And then he has all the steps of taking out a talis. Every single one. It's a velvet bag, right? And how you unfold it, and how you kiss the neck band, and how the neck band is sometimes embroidered and sometimes it's metallic, like gold. And how you put it above your head. Wait a second, now it changes. Right? Up to this point, it's like directions for putting on a talis. And here it is. It's kamosha mayim. Okay, that's a good analogy for a talit. Kamo chupa, kamo matzneach. Which of these things doesn't belong here?
Matzneach,
right?
What?
Why? The chupa is in Hebrew. When you talk about matzneach, the word is chupa.
Mm-hmm. Right. So. The verb is that you use is
when you describe like a matzneach, it has a chupa.
Right. So there's that. And there's also that all of these things are overhead and in a sense, in the best of times, provide protection. Right? The shamayim, we sort of picture God as protecting, and the chupa that brings two people together, hopefully in a positive and protective way, and the matzneach. And then you turn wrap it around your head like in machboim. And then you put it over all your whole body and you sort of huddle into it like, and it's like a chrysalis in a sense. And so, and...
Golem shalpapar.
Right, it's like the golem shalpapar. It's like the very basic, like before it turns into a parpa.
Right. It's just interesting that golem is
that. That's right. The word he uses.
Yeah. Is that would that be a word often used in? I mean, is that the word that's used for that to describe it? It's just the word he uses.
I never took biology, English, or Hebrew. Right. So I don't know the answer to that question. Is golem
something that you use a lot? Yes.
Yes. No, in this context.
It's also a name of a children's game. There is a golem in the golem b'magal. Mm-hmm. So it's a word that you use.
And you open it like wings, and then you could fly. And if you think of the motion of putting the talus on your shoulders, it's sort of like bird wings. Okay? And so here are some questions about a talit that I never thought about before I read this poem, which is, why does it have stripes? Why is it like a checkerboard?
Right.
Right? And he has a great answer. It's because squares are finite, and something that's finite has no hope. Can't go beyond the edges. Hapasim ba'im ein sof yotzim le'ein sof. And so here's a little line from Euclidean geometry, right? Lines go from infinity to infinity. They're infinite. And so, the ein sof, of course, is a Kabbalistic term, right? So here are all these things just because the talus is striped. And they're like an airport, like runways.
Uh-huh.
And so for the angels to land and to take off, which angels are those? You met these angels, trust me. They're Jacob's angels.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, the ones who took him out.
Right? Because the highest thing that Jacob could have was a sulam. He didn't know about runways. But now, if we want to get to the Shamayim, we use planes. So here we are. It's just a little bit updated. And it has the notion of getting, you know, the link between heaven and earth.
But the Matzneach and the Sde Tufa and the Malachim,
well, that's the
that's got to be the Chiloni
thread. Yes, of course it's a Chiloni thread. Yes. And so is the end of it, when he goes back and reprises the first line, right? Misha Tatei Fatalit Li Olam Lo Yishkach. And Kishahu Yotzei Min HaBrecha. Now, in Hebrew, I was just going over this with one of my grandsons last night. In Hebrew, Sidur, Tanakh, and poetry, the convention is always to vocalize them. Other texts are not vocalized in modern Hebrew. Mm-hmm. Okay? But if, for example, there were no vowels under Brecha.
Brecha.
It's bracha, it's right there, staring us in the face, right?
It's the same root anyway.
Yeah. Omin hayam. So you get out. Mitatef magevet gedola uforeso tashuv. You do the same thing with a big towel, right? Ve'al rosho v'shuv mitkarpel bat samud samud v'ro'ed od kitzat. It's that trembling before God. But also when you come out of the water.
Right.
It's so chek. And you laugh, you smile, you move our head. And so what is the bracha? I also brought you the Alex Levadis. I couldn't possibly do it without it. But I also know that usually when I was teaching Levadis, it would take a whole hour, so I put it at the back of the appendix. Thank you so much. Yeah.